Frontier Fighters. Frontier Fighters, the amazing adventures of fearless pioneer men and women who fought and conquered the West. To those whose senses still throb to the memory of Pike's Peak Rush, Colorado is indeed a homeland won from the red man and nature. In 1857, some Cherokee Indians brought the word 600 miles across desert waste and mountains to Iowa that a little gold and silver had been found near Pike's Peak. Among those who immediately went in search of an easy fortune and didn't find it were D.C. Oaks, Jack Jones, and William Green Russell of Iowa. These leaders, together with a handful of people, decided that this land 600 miles from nowhere must have a name. It should be a state and admitted to Congress.
They're laughing at us in Washington.
Hey, there ain't 500 people in the whole 600 miles, counting the braves and squaws.
You're forgetting the papooses, Tom. They sure swell the population.
Just a minute. This meeting is getting a little out of hand here. Yeah.
All right, man. Let's listen a while now to Trader Jack Jones.
Right. It's true, I reckon, that we're 600 miles from nowhere in the Pike's Peak country, but it's beginning to fill up.
Oh, shut up, Tom.
Over at our area on the west side of Cherry Creek, they got 200 settlers. Five women, bless them. On the east side of Cherry Creek, there's St. Charles.
That ain't St. Charles anymore, Jack.
What's that, Oaks?
We went in there this morning and found just some teepees and Indian traders. So we took it over and named it Denver in honor of Governor Denver of Kansas.
I guess things move pretty fast out here at Pike's Peak. Well, anyway, I'm for giving this whole country a name, getting it organized into a territory, and sending a representative to Congress.
Yeah! We'll go there on the map!
Yeah, they've got to. Jefferson's got a future, I tell you. Denver will be a great city.
Better get along, Oaks, before we changes our minds. This time.
Get on, you faker, you. And when you ride home, don't you dare tell the folks you found gold growing on trees.
Oh, well, let's see. Get up.
Pike Peak a bust. Guess we can put that motto in mothballs for many a day to come.
Some of the 150,000 turned back. Some stayed. A few farmed. Some became storekeepers. Others mined enough gold and silver to eke out a bare living. But thousands waited, still clinging to the last straw of hope that somebody, somewhere, would discover a mother lode. But Denver, that new miracle city of the West, continued to thrive. On May 6, 1859, 8,000 feet high in the Rocky Mountains, John Gregory accidentally discovered a gulch with the richest quartz seen by any miner of his day. The first pan yielded half an ounce of pure gold.
Hooray! This is the stuff! This mountain's full of it.
Better pan another run of it, just to make sure.
Tain't no need to try that, but it makes you happy. Here goes. There she is. Another $8 pan. Wilk, we're rich.
The news spread like wildfire. Denver and Auraria were emptied in the short span from sundown to sunrise. But who this time would take the news east that people would believe? Fate sent none other than Horace Greeley, famous roving correspondent for the New York Tribune, who addressed the first mass meeting in the Rocky Mountains.
Ladies and gentlemen, partners, I give you the man who's going east and tell them the truth. That great and wonderful editor and writer and our friend, Mr. Horace Greeley.
Friend, I can go back east and tell them the truth about this gold rush. I've seen with my own eyes gold and oyster cans and buckskin sacks coming out of the mountain. The east needs your gold, the west needs supplies. Gold is a fine slogan, but I'll give them one better, especially for the youth of the nation. I'll tell them, if they want a future, want to grow up with a new country, to go west, young man, go west.
Go west, young man, was more than just advice. It became a battle cry taken up by youths all over the land. It was more. Late in 1859, the gold production was 500,000. By 1860, it jumped to 3,250,000. Denver and our area united to become Denver City, the Queen City of the Plains. Then came one of the most eventful years in the history of Denver, 1863. Mrs. Middleton, whose husband was the half-owner in the lumber firm of Middleton and Wagner, one night awakened her husband.
Seth, wake up. Wake up, Seth.
What's that? Indians. Hand me my gun.
Seth, it's not Indians. I think there's a fire somewhere about. I'm positive I can hear the crackle.
Sounds like it. Mother, it's in our lumber yard.
Oh.
And look, the flames are spreading like wildfire to other buildings.
Oh, I'll get into this dress. There's the bell in the square.
You better hurry, Mother. Or in a minute, we'll be lost.
Couldn't do a thing against that fire with buckets and pails. The whole east side of the town's gone.
Oh, the Lord have mercy on us. All the houses and stores were wooden and dry as tinder.
Burned to the ground. Everything we owned gone up in smoke.
Everything except our hope. When they build Denver anew, Seth, we'll build with them.
Build with them? On what?
Seth, dear, on faith.
Not alone did the Middletons build on faith, but every soul in East Denver. For no sooner had they rebuilt from the disastrous fire when a flood completely destroyed the city. Many believed the last day was at hand and that they were being called to judgment. But such sturdy stock as had originally founded Denver survived fire, flood, famine, and Indian attacks. Then came the proudest day in Denver's life. On August 1st, 1876, Colorado was saluted as a State of the Union, and Denver a famous historical city. And so, another thrilling chapter is enacted in the lives of famous frontier fighters of the rugged West.